album this week is Lenny Bruce's American 1961. My guest is Jackie Cation.
Hello and welcome to me.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Coming all the way out here on this disgustingly hot day. I'm sorry. I'm so not used to LA, and I've been here 13 years, and I still can't handle
years.
The heat.
13 years. Can't take it.
Mm-mm.
Weird.
I'm a wuss.
Yeah, that's weird.
I'm a wussy baby.
Where did you come from?
Upstate New York.
Okay, so I came from Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
and then Wisconsin before that. I'm pouring water. I'm not peeing. And so it is warm here. It's too bad you can't crank the AC. Or
it's on. You just can't feel it. You know what? Actually,
no worries.
Let me.
You gonna do the fan?
Let's see
if it's loud.
Who gives a shit if it's loud and annoying? They don't care at home.
Podcasts are free, you guys.
That's exactly right, and they've heard much worse.
And they're super supportive of the podcast fans.
That's exactly right.
All right.
That feels a little better.
I don't mind that at all.
Okay, good.
Hopefully, the audience does not.
So, when did you first hear this album? Why did you pick it?
Because it's the only album.
Yeah.
It's the absolute only comedy album it was the first comedy album I purchased, and then I purchased the one after this,
mm-hmm.
where he was at Carnegie Hall.
Oh, yeah.
And it was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I know he's a genius.
Sure.
But you know what, to be a genius, my theory?
Mm-hmm.
You only have to be a genius once.
Yeah, exactly right.
And one great joke, you can be a genius.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of it, you can a modicum of talent.
That's absolutely true.
So I'm okay with that.
He's one of those guys who, you know, I don't ever want to crap on him because I love him and I think he was brilliant. But, you know, stuff kind of fell apart for him personally, and then
he's a drug addict.
Professionally, yeah. It just fell apart from there.
Right.
You know?
Well, it's hard when you're not showing up for things,
yeah.
and then you get so in a shame spiral of crazy, self-righteous, full of shame, weird, you know, because he was reading transcripts from his, from the court cases, but not this album. This album, okay, so in 1984,
mm-hmm.
85 maybe, I bought this album because I had started doing stand-up comedy and somebody mentioned him and I was like, who's Lenny Bruce? I'm 19. And 19. And so I was mocked openly by comedians.
Right.
But the most sensitive of birds. And then they were like, he's the best thing ever. You totally need to see him.
Mm-hmm.
He's dead now, so you should go get an album.
Mm-hmm.
And then nobody, by the way, moved on and told me to see Hicks. But I started at Bill Kinison's
mm-hmm.
club, which was Sam Kinison's brother.
Mm-hmm.
So you would have thought Bill Hicks would have come up.
You would think so.
He never did. Never did.
Huh.
What I did was I bought this album,
mm-hmm.
and I listened to it, and I only liked probably three out of, the dozen tracks?
Yeah, yeah.
And so some of them are great, and parts of all of them are great.
Uh-huh.
And he is a great comic, but his, especially in the 80s, when Seinfeld and all that observational stuff was coming in,
mm-hmm.
His stuff is more 1999.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird, the cycle, because it's storytelling
with
a punchline.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, so the Lima, Ohio bit.
Yeah.
Was the only one I remembered when I listened to it again.
Right, yeah, you mentioned that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the only one I remembered. And I was like, oh, good, that track is on this album.
And it's about stand-up.
And it's about stand-up, and it's about being trapped. His manager or PA agent or whatever left him in Lima, Ohio for 3 weeks. And there was nothing to do. Clearly, no jazz. The thing that truly devastated him.
Right.
And he was talking about the guy in the gas station. I don't think that's the only thing that's open at night. That guy doesn't swing. but it was, yeah. And I listened to the whole thing and the How to Relax Your Colored Friends at Parties.
Oh, so good.
It's good because it was, everybody was doing, was trying, comics were trying to do racial comedy, I understand.
Yeah, yeah.
And trying to bring it out and calm people down and just sort of let us laugh about what asshats we have been.
For sure.
The last 400 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's go forth and fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And this was another bit like that, but it was so much more graphic and so much more to the point.
Mm-hmm.
It was wonderful. It's such a good bit.
It's, and I think I first, like a lot of comedy, while I have collected comedy albums for a long time. I mean, in college, it was mostly download whatever sounded interesting. And then that's when I learned what I should be buying once I had money to buy things, you know.
Right, right.
I was super cheap. And I know that this, you know, you mentioned it, and I didn't recognize the title of the album, and I didn't recognize the Lima, Ohio thing, but I had heard it all. And so...
Just from weird downloads?
Exactly,
like
right.
Kind of,
100%.
Yeah.
But now, hearing it in context of the whole album, I totally agree, though. It's obviously... It's hit and miss, but that's how he is.
Yeah.
But when he's strong, he's so strong.
But that's everybody, you know?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, people talk about Zach Galifianakis as a genius, as a stand-up comic.
Sure.
But it is hit and miss, my friends.
Yeah.
And it is a joy to behold.
Mm-hmm.
But when he's missing... I gotta take a lap.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, I love you, man.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna go get a drink.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's, I'll be right back. I'll be right back. And you will have dug into yourself out of that hole.
Right.
So it's all good.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing, too, is the strength of. Well, first of all, I hadn't thought about... I don't know what the earliest bit of any stand-up talking about stand-up is that I've ever heard, but this might be it. I mean, that's
right.
Pretty, you know, like...
Right.
It wasn't, nobody cared.
About, right,
you know, you wouldn't assume anybody cared.
Right. But he was... You know, he did relate it to the audience. He was like, I don't know if you guys are any traveling salesmen.
Oh, right, 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 yeah.
Yeah, he tried to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he tried to bridge a gap to the people.
Yeah.
And how funny... The projectionist and the Capizio shoes. Such a great bit. And of course, you know, and then he... I remember using this just in conversation, not on stage, obviously. But I mean,
right.
Whenever anyone calls me too early in the morning,
mm-hmm.
I like to say, yeah, no, I love to get up 15 hours before I have to go to work. You know, it gives me a chance to brush my teeth, get a cup of coffee in.
That's so fantastic. I just, and I don't, I wonder, there's the bit, the how to relax your colored friends at parties is,
mm-hmm.
And please be aware, everybody, we're using this. The term in context, that is the name of the bit.
Right, we're calling them colored friends because they were called colored friends in 1961.
Mm-hmm. But there's a person in it with him, and the gentleman's name I don't have in front of me.
Yeah, who was that?
Let me look it up because... but this whole... I don't know if it's hit and miss because it's very uneven, because he doesn't seem to thematically be coming at it. Not all stand-ups have a theme to what they're doing necessarily,
right.
But it's very up and down and all over the place.
You thought it was up and down and all over the place? It was redundant.
It talks about very different things.
Well, I thought it was pretty redundant.
Yeah.
But it was, I think, probably on purpose,
uh-huh.
Because it needed to be.
Sure.
Because people aren't necessarily... Because this... In my, without any information, let's just speculate, because I think this was one of the first bits that was that hard hitting. Like, he says the N-word.
Sure, yeah.
He talks about, he calls the guy a coon.
Oh, yes, yes,
he calls the guy a boy, and he talks about how he makes racial slurs towards the Jews, which Lenny Bruce is Jewish.
Yeah.
But he used all of those racial slurs as well. And it was, I think it was just where he wanted to really hammer it in.
Uh-huh.
Like, absolutely everything that you think is okay to say to a black person,
mm-hmm.
you're wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
That is, nobody cares where the watermelon and the chicken is,
uh-huh.
What side of town you live on. Oh, I wondered. And I got a sister, and, you know, you wouldn't want a Jew doing it to your sister.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes on like that. And
yep.
It, I mean, I think he's just like, he's gonna freaking beat it into the ground.
Yeah.
So that whatever you think you're doing, you're wrong.
Right.
You should just be polite.
Mm-hmm.
Who raised you?
Right.
And raised you, just talk about books, talk about television,
right.
Don't talk about their race.
Mm-hmm.
It's so weird. It's such an interesting, you know, I mean, one comment, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, hey, neat.
Right, right.
How funny would that have been? Hey, neat, a black person. How did you get... This is awesome. Anyway. And then you move on to a regular conversation.
Yes.
But I thought it was... The through line
mm-hmm.
was very, very even.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
And it was shock comedy,
yeah.
Obviously.
For sure.
Right?
Yeah.
There was no end.
Mm-hmm.
And there was not a lot of punchlines.
Mm-hmm.
But it was still very funny
and
very shocking. And I think important. I think important work.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. I mean, it's so hard, though. I mean, are you ever tempted to sacrifice jokes for being important, quote unquote?
Oh, right. Right.
Because it's hard. It's
brutal to hear.
Yeah, it can be.
I say it an open mic.
Uh-huh.
Because that's the purpose of it. Because
the
thing is, if you have something important, and we're both using air quotes,
mm-hmm.
if you have something important to say,
Yeah.
You know, the, use your art to say something important, whether you're painting a picture or writing a poem, writing a song or a play. That's great to say something important, but everyone would like it to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so at an open mic, you can be rageful. And, like, as I have a bit, I have several hundreds over the last 25 years of bits that just started out as rageful rants that didn't have any end, and they didn't have any punchlines. But sometimes I found them, sometimes I just was mad offstage.
Sure.
Let it go.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't find the funny.
Right.
You know, sometimes the politics, they're not... Some, especially with politics and with racial stuff and social justice and stuff, it's really hard to find the funny because you're just like, could we all just keep it together?
Yeah.
What is the problem?
There were kids 8 and 9 years old that were sniffing airplane glue to get high on. These kids are responsible for turning musicians on a lot of things they never knew about, actually. So I had a fantasy how it happened. Kid is alone in his room. It's Saturday. Kid is played by George McCready. Well, let's see now. I'm all alone in the room, and it's Saturday. I'll make an airplane. That's what I'll do. I'll make a Lancaster, good structural design. I'll get the balsa wood here, cut it out, sand it off. Now a little airplane glue. I'll rub it on the rag, and, here now. I'm getting loaded. Is this possible? Loaded on airplane glue? Maybe it's stuffy, and I'll call my dog over. Filika? Filika, come here, darling, and smell this rag. Smell it, you freaky little doggy. Smell the rag, Filika. Filika. Filika! He's up there. I've done it. I'm the Louis Pasteur of junkiedom. Out of my skull for 10 cents. Well, there's much work to be done now. Horses' hooves to melt down. Noses to get ready. Cut to the toy store. Any toy store. Any neighborhood. Kid walks in.
Hello, Schindler. Nice the way you got here. Give me a nickel's worth of pencils, big boy tablet, some juju beans, tailspin Tommy book, and 2,000 tubes of aeroplane glue.
I hope you can sleep tonight, Mr. Lee Page.
It's hard when it seems like this is just common fucking sense.
It should be. Mm. It should be that, like, Augie Smith last night was hanging out. I don't know if you know him.
Mm-mm.
He's a great comic from Portland. And he is doing this bit about he has a baby. He has a new baby. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, well, kids today, man, they, you know, they get trophies for everything. They, you know, they're crowned and they're feted. And, you know, everybody loves every move that they make. And so he goes off on... When you're a kid, you should, of course, play dodgeball, and Valentine's Day, no one should give everyone a Valentine. And, you know, and he's doing a satire.
Sure.
It's a character. And it has a punchline at the end of it.
Yeah.
And but it's also a kind of a message piece or an important piece.
Sure, sure.
And but it's funny.
Yeah.
It's got all kinds of things going for it.
Mm-hmm.
The main thing, the comedy part of it.
Right, right. How quickly do you know when to give up on a piece like that? Does it take a
Never
while?
Never quickly enough.
No?
Never quickly enough. It's, I've worked I've been working on this bit that will not... It's a funny story.
Mm-hmm.
They're funny stories. They're anecdotes.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't... There's no point to them except for... I don't know who I'm trying to convince that I do love my father. And because it's this whole thing about how he's the worst role model. But he's 85% correct, but the last 15% is sheer insanity. And so for over a year and a half, I've been working on this bit, and it is not great.
Okay.
And there's no... It doesn't mean it isn't entertaining.
Sure.
But there's no reason to put it in a short set where people would like to have many laughs in 10 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In a 45-minute to an hour set, people kind of like a nice story in the middle where they're like, oh, yeah, tell me about the time your dad bought matching Derringers for no reason.
Oh, my God.
You're like, all right.
So you picked this up on a recommendation.
Yes.
Okay, so what was your first... What did you think you had to learn from Lenny Bruce, first of all? Was there something like, well, I have to learn to be important, or was there something that was...
No, well, it was... Okay, so I started at a club. There were 6 or 7 of us.
Uh-huh.
And then the club owner was Bill Kinnison, and he would bring in headliners from the Comedy Store in 1984, 85,
mm-hmm.
Who were willing... And this, remember, this is that mythical boom we hear so much about, mm-hmm. That we're willing to work for like $250 plus air and a horrible, horrible student apartment.
Crazy.
Condo
kind of
situation. And so he brought in some guys who had just started, and one woman, mm-hmm. Who had just started in these 8 months that this club was open. And so I was told that Lenny Bruce was super important and that I needed to listen to him.
Sure.
And so I was also, you know, it's like in those 8 months I learned things like you're not supposed to steal other people's jokes.
Right.
Because you didn't know before.
Yeah, of course.
And,
yeah.
Right. And I had never heard a lot of stand-up comedy. I think I'd seen Gallagher on Make Me Laugh. And and then I had seen, again, Gallagher on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
Sure.
And then I had heard the Noah bit on the radio with my dad one time, mm-hmm. in his car, the Bill Cosby bit. And that was the extent of my stand-up comedy. The rest of it was all motivational speakers and stuff that my father would encourage us to listen to.
Uh-huh.
Zig Ziglar.
Uh-huh.
And nobody told me what I was supposed to be learning from it. They told me that he was just the greatest, and, you know, if I didn't know about him, I was a maroon.
Oh, of course.
And I'm like, all right, well, I don't want to be a maroon. Let's do it.
And, all right, so you, when you first listened to it, I mean, like you said, it was kind of hit and miss for you.
Mm-hmm.
You did definitely like the Lima, Ohio bit. Was there something about him as a person that drew you in? Like, did you like his personality
as
a comic?
Well, you know, it was the time when I was reading, like, Hemingway.
Okay.
And, and so he was part of that, right? I mean,
sure.
He was part, but he was older. I mean, he's a lot younger than Hemingway.
Sure.
But he was like those drunken, drug-addled jackasses,
mm-hmm.
who were also like, revered as these artistes.
Yeah.
And, you know, and when you're in college, everyone's like, man, you can't create unless you're stoned. Man, you can't, you know, only the great drunks were like the greatest. And no one remembers that. George Carlin died sober,
he'll
die with his shoes on, and
mm-hmm.
he died, you know, and there's plenty of geniuses. Bill Cosby used to be an example of that until certain things were revealed of his insanity. But yeah, there's so much. Yeah, they're so I was drawn to him because he was a fuck up.
Yeah.
But he was also a hilarious fuck up.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the thing that you're like, oh, and so was Sam Kinison.
Yeah.
And he was the other role model at the time, was Sam Kinison. And you're like, oh, that guy's a disaster of a person.
Mm-hmm.
But he's very, very funny.
Yeah.
So this seems like myself. I'm only half a disaster. And it'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was encouraging and yet, in the long run, not entirely helpful.
Yeah.
Because it encouraged me to excesses that put you back instead.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I've always wondered that too. I've never been. I mean, I think I've used a drug once.
Sure.
And it's always frightened. Like, freaked me out. Like the idea that anybody could keep their shit together, because it's hard to be funny. It's not easy. So how the hell you can be that funny while you're probably high off your ass? I don't understand that.
Well, and you watched Mitch Hedberg's last year.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, 2 years before it was bad, 2 years before he died,
mm-hmm.
he was stoned, and he was high, and he was drunk, and he was all of those things, but he nailed it.
Yeah.
You know, he could keep it together, and you last as long as you last on drugs and alcohol.
Of course.
And then you do not. Then eventually they win.
Mm-hmm.
And so his last couple of sets were just a slurring mess.
Really?
Yeah. And you're like, dude, please get your shit together. They almost had to amputate his leg because of heroin.
Holy
and
shit.
It gangrened.
Oh my God.
Because he was shooting up in his thigh.
Oh.
And they only found out because he forgot to take the heroin out of his bag at the Houston airport.
Uh-huh.
And so they arrested him.
Yeah.
Then they strip searched him.
Jesus Christ.
And they were like, well, first you're going to the hospital because your leg is gangrene.
Wow.
And they saved his leg.
Yeah.
Only to have him OD in wherever, New Jersey or
Jesus
something.
Christ.
But yeah, I mean, it's so tempting to think, cool dirtbag.
Of course.
Right?
Of course.
You're like, that guy's a dirtbag, and people like him,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to be a dirtbag. You're like, what if you aren't successful? Then
right.
You're just a dirtbag. Why don't you be a decent person and not worry about your success and just try to write something funny.
Yeah, that'd be nice, right? Yeah. Do you think it, again, you can only, it's only conjecture at this point, but do you think it's a matter of I've got my shit down and it just, it's a pattern at this point?
Oh,
the being good while drunk, but like, oh, you know, yeah, I
think,
or high.
I think it escalates, right? Yeah. First, you have just a couple of beers before you go on stage,
sure,
and you have a couple of beers while you're on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time you get off stage, you're pretty drunk.
Yeah,
and people send up shots, and sure, you know, you yeah, do them, and then so initially you're just a beer or two in, mm-hmm, and then you're three or four beers in, and then you're doing shots on stage. So it's a learned skill to yeah, keep going.
Yeah.
And congratulations if you've learned. I did shots on stage a couple of times,
mm-hmm,
just one nighter stuff,
mm-hmm,
and I wasn't very good at it.
Okay.
So I had to stop. I did power drink afterwards.
Uh-huh.
I was like, "We will do this. This is. I am more than interested in doing shots with you.
Uh-huh.
Allow me to finish my job first."
Right.
And
yeah.
So there was that. And
do you think it's a do you think there's a difference? And I it's going to be different with every comic, but I mean, some people do, like you said, you just called it your job.
Yeah.
But where some people are going to look at it, and not that you don't consider it your art also, but some people might only think of it as art, so therefore the responsibility isn't there.
Oh, interesting.
Even though they know they're getting paid for their art, quote unquote,
right?
Like, they might not look at it as a.
I heard a story about little Nicky Swartzen.
Uh-huh.
He's got to be 35 now, but Nick Swartzen went to do the Comedy Works, maybe,
uh-huh,
in Denver.
Okay.
And he shows up on a Tuesday, and he's unshaven. He's wearing shorts and a wrinkled T-shirt, and he goes up and he's working from his notes, and he gets off stage, and the manager's like, "No. No, this is, you're paying you a lot of money." And this is 10 years ago, probably.
Uh-huh.
But it was like, "We're paying you a lot of money to stand up. What the hell are you doing?" And he goes, "It's a Tuesday. What are you? It's a casual day. What do you mean?" And I don't know that he called it a casual day, but Tuesdays and Sundays, if you do a week on the road where you do a Tuesday through Sunday,
mm-hmm,
you get there on Tuesday, you leave, go home on Monday morning,
mm-hmm,
Tuesdays and Sundays do tend to be pretty loosey-goosey.
Uh-huh.
I'm not a huge fan of shorts on stage, but that's because I'm
sure,
pretty old school. And but I think a lot of new comics find it annoying, too.
Uh-huh.
And but my new thing that I don't like on stage is when you have your phone in your pocket.
Oh.
Because everyone can see your phone in your pocket.
Yeah.
It's like, are you expecting a call?
Right.
And you know, like when your wallet is in your back pocket and it makes
yeah,
that dent?
Yes.
And it affects your jeans, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have that look in your pants pocket, in the front pocket. And
yeah.
It's just distracting. Where you're
yeah,
like,
I could see that. Yeah.
Why's your phone there? But if you're using it as a timer, I mm-hmm, get that, because
sure,
then it'll just buzz when you do
okay,
it.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I'm a little uneven myself about
right,
the cell phone in the pocket.
This is the typical white person's concept of how we relax colored people at parties. Hey, it's a hell of a spread. They're really not a. Put on
yeah,
feast
yes,
these
yes,
people.
Yes, very nice.
Really
yes,
beautiful.
Very
nice. I didn't get your name.
Miller.
My name is Ennis, Mr. Miller.
Nice to meet you.
I never saw you around this neighborhood. You live around here?
Yeah, on the other side.
Oh, well, I was wondering about that. That Joe Louis is a hell of a fighter.
Yeah,
hell of a man. Hell of a. That'll be another Joe Louis. You got a cigarette on you?
Yeah.
Oh, the one you're smoking? All right, I'll put that out for you. You know, I don't know these people too well. Are you familiar with them?
No, that's quite a...
I don't know if they're... I think they're Hebes. You're not Jewish, are you? No offense. Some of my best friends are Jews. We have them over the house for dinner. They're all right, you know. Some sheenies are no good, but you seem like a white Jew to me. Yeah.
Sense, like you say, you weren't necessarily a big like comedy album buyer or anything, but you did
right,
say that you bought
the second one,
yeah,
Carnegie Hall one.
Yes, right.
I bought that one, and then weirdest story about comedy albums, and I wish I knew what they were, but my mother threw them away, is when they got divorced,
uh-huh,
was that she or my dad collected comedy albums in the 60s.
Okay.
And after I started doing stand-up comedy, I came home from college and I was going through albums,
mm-hmm,
and I was like, yeah, there's a, I think they had the button-down one,
yep,
from Bob Newhart.
Sure.
And they had a bunch, like two or three, not a bunch, but felt like a gold mine of comedy albums. And they were all just super the whitest guys in the world
of
in
course.
Suits and the skinniest ties.
All these guys, probably a bunch of them.
Yeah, yeah, very possible.
Smothers
Holy
Brothers.
Criminy. But it was, Nichols and May.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard of them.
So
I know who they are, but that is it. And then, yeah. So, but I have, and I listened to them, and my father had been stealing bits off of them for 20 years. And I confronted him about it, and I said, Dad, you're not supposed to steal material. You got to write your own material. And he said, I'm a salesman.
You're right.
I'm not a comedian. I get to take anything I want.
Exactly
to make
right.
Sale. Do not.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, done and done.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Then.
I mean, you know, there's probably plenty of comedians who've stolen shit from a salesman, so I suppose it's fine to
right.
back and forth it. Why
right,
not?
Right, right. Why not?
Not in the same industry.
Not in the same industry. Just trying to make a sale. Just trying to make an audience laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And
how early into it did you sort of, I mean, maybe it was quick for you, but how old were you when you started doing
19?
Comedy? You're 19. So
yeah.
Was it a job right away for you, or even if it wasn't paying you, or did you, like,
it was,
did
it take it was a heroin. It was
yeah.
crack.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
was immediate.
That's
it was
awesome.
Instantaneous.
That's awesome.
8 months, I did a set every night,
mm-hmm.
two on the weekends. I got $10 a week. I got a 1.8 that semester.
Uh-huh.
And then the club burned down. Thank you, God. Because then I graduated.
Okay.
But, but because I'm glad I graduated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't want to. My sister was very funny about the whole thing. Because
mm-hmm.
as soon as I started doing stand-up, I was like, you know, I think I'm going to quit.
Shit.
And just do stand-up.
Uh-huh.
And she was like, what? No, there's only 3 more years left, Jackie. You got to finish it. And
yeah.
I was like, and she said, the club's there. It'll be fine. And I'm like, okay. And then the next year, when the club had burned down, but I was doing open mics, I'm like, I'm thinking of moving to Chicago or Minneapolis
mm-hmm.
and doing stand-up. And she's like, Jackie, it's just another 3 years. Because it hadn't gone well. It was still 3 years.
Yeah.
And then the year after that, she was like, it's only 2 years. It's only another 2 years. It'll be fine. It took me 5 years to graduate. But
that's how it goes.
That's how it goes sometimes. So.
Yeah, it does. All right. So what part of Minnesota then are you from?
I'm from outside of Milwaukee.
Oh, you're out from
Wisconsin.
Oh, you're from Wisconsin. I'm
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, and I went to the University of Wisconsin.
Okay. Okay.
Madison.
And, okay.
And then I moved. The six guys that I were doing stand up with,
mm-hmm.
there was such weird cat infighting.
Oh, okay.
It was one of the silliest. In retrospect,
mm-hmm.
looking back at us. And even at the time, I was always like, what are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
And why are we all mad at nothing?
Uh-huh.
And everyone was mad at nothing.
Sure.
And there was a lot of, like, I'm funnier than you kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's almost
Gross.
A caricature of what people think comics are.
Yes, yeah.
I'm funnier than you, man. Man, you're not funny. Why don't you just go suck your own dick?
Oh,
or some
Jesus
horrible
Christ.
Comedy analogy of
uh-huh.
that. And you just want to go, why is all of this happening? And so when we all graduated...
Mm-hmm.
Most of them moved to Chicago to do stand-up.
Uh-huh.
So I moved to Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Because I was like, and done. And I love you like brothers. I don't need to hang out with them either.
Yeah.
So I went to Minneapolis in 90.
Okay.
And then, because I graduated in 88, but I spent most of 89 drunk.
Okay.
And then doing some open mics. And I went to Europe.
All right.
And for 3 months, I got an exchange thing. So
nice.
I got to go for cheap.
Awesome.
And so... Mostly London, and it was the dumbest way to go to London. It was called Bunac, and
uh-huh.
so I worked at a youth hostel from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m.,
uh-huh.
and I worked at a movie theater from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m.
Holy shit.
So guess who got to see a lot of London?
Yeah.
Not it.
Right, right.
And but at the end of it, I moved to Minneapolis because I had a brother live there.
Okay.
I always move places where I have a place to crash
for. Of course.
A
of course you do.
And, because that's what you should do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sensible.
It's sensible. I moved to Los Angeles because my friend Jennifer lived here,
mm-hmm.
and she said, well, I have an extra mattress. I got a new bed, so I have an extra mattress. It'll be on the floor in my studio, but you're welcome to it. And we lived together for 3 years.
Uh-huh.
And I ended up getting a bed with a bed, you know, it was nice. I got a
That's
frame,
good.
And it was exciting times.
Was it as nice as a futon you're
it's
sitting
exactly,
on right now?
It was exactly what this was. And and then after 3 years living in a studio together, she handed me an OXO set,
mm-hmm.
You know, flippers and tongs.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, you got to get out. We're 30 years old. Let's live alone.
Yeah, I know how that is.
She said, the next person I want to live with, I want to be married to.
Right.
Or living with, and I need some action.
It's so impossible to do that out here, though. But, you know.
It worked.
Yeah.
She's married, got two kids,
well,
lives
there you
over
go.
In Pasadena.
Mm-hmm.
I'm married, no kids. We have a perfectly nice iguana.
That sounds good.
And over in Van Nuys. So,
All right, so I'm curious then, what if you weren't, not that comedy albums are your only way to get into it, where you watched, did you like a lot of comedy TV and movies? What made you realize that stand-up was it?
You know what? I loved comedy from a very young age. It was a very kind of a weird, like a tipping point kind of moment that I remember not long ago, where I was watching an episode of MASH. And not one of the great ones either. It was Charles was there. And so it was a later episode. And he said something. I forget what it was, but it was just a piece of snark.
Okay.
And it was super sarcastic, and it made me laugh. And I said out loud, and my family was in the room, and I said, oh, I got to remember that. And my dad said, why would you need to remember that? And I said, oh, I'm going to use it. I don't know where. And he was like, what? And weirdly enough, I never saw stand-up except for those couple of times I said. Mm-hmm. And then when I went, one of the first shows, you know, the drinking age was 18. Uh-huh. And I was, so I think it was this my second year of college, we went to the comedy club. Was it the second year? Had to be the first year of college, quite honestly. Uh-huh. Who cares, Jackie? We go to the club, and I saw Sam Kinison. Uh-huh. He was the first comic I ever saw live.
Wow.
I was sitting in the front row. Mm-hmm. I was right before he did Letterman, probably about 6 months before he did Letterman, and blew the fuck up.
Yeah.
And I'm a little cussy. Anyway, so so was Lenny Bruce. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so, but I heckled him. Yeah, it wasn't my finest moment. And it means that when I get heckled, I'm always like, ugh, karma. Why is it continuing? I've tried to make up for this. And I just, he was having a hard, he was high or something. There was trouble. Mm-hmm. And he blew it off, and it wasn't great. And so it wasn't even a great heckle.
Uh-huh.
He said that he was from Peoria, couldn't think of what the next line was for some reason. Oh, no. And I said, I'm sorry, which is a classic, like, just sort of a sarcastic snark.
Yeah.
And then he mopped up the floor with me.
I was going to ask you.
Right. But I was so drunk by then, I wouldn't shut up. I was the worst kind of heckler, which is a drunk woman. Because even when you're a woman comic, it's hard to shut down a woman heckler.
Really?
Because the audience, for some unknown genetic reason, is on her side anyway.
On her side,
anyway.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
So he couldn't shut me down. So finally, manager came over and said, you gotta shut up. And he was funny about it, because I remember that guy, I forget his name offhand, but he goes, you know, open mic's on Sunday. And weirdly enough, 3 weeks later, I came to open mic. And then I did it every night forever.
How many times did he call you the C word? That's all I'm wondering.
He didn't.
Wow, I'm surprised.
No, I don't think he did.
Oh, that's good.
It's a bit of a blackout, but he might have. You know, I always have a... I'm always surprised about the C word, because the new generation of comics, it's more British to them. It's
sure,
more of a,
of
like
course.
A calling someone a bitch or
a
cunt. Mm-hmm. But the weird thing about cunt is that I would rather be called a cunt than a bitch, because I don't know what they mean when they say cunt.
Yeah.
I know exactly what they mean when they call me a bitch. They mean a mean-spirited person.
Sure.
And it turns out I am not that.
Right.
I work very hard not to be that. Mm-hmm. Oh. I stuff it. All the mean-spiritedness.
Yeah, I guess you're right. It's interesting to listen to those words change. I've just had it just like in my head. I'm thinking, what kind of things would he have said to her? And that was the first thing that popped into my head.
Yeah,
but,
well, I think...
Wow.
He didn't... Weirdly enough, he didn't call me fat, which is a tribute to him.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's... The thing with when dealing with hecklers is that... Initially, you're perfectly like, hey, keep it together.
Yeah.
We're at a public venue.
Yeah.
Please stop talking. Until finally, you're saying the worst thing ever.
Of course.
But Sam Kinison had been doing stand-up comedy in 1984 for, what, 10 years?
Sure, yeah.
8 years? So he didn't need to go...
Right.
And he was Sam Kinison.
Yeah.
So he could... He might have did that thing where he just screamed in my face for 40 seconds.
Right.
I wonder if he did do that. That'd be interesting.
That'd be amazing. My next question was, how much spit did you get on you? Because, like, that front row, like, that's insane, though.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay, so that's the first stand-up you see live.
Yeah.
I mean, did that change your perception and make you want to do it more?
It made me want to do that kind of stand-up.
Okay.
It's made me think, well, that's what stand-up is.
Okay.
Stand-up is dirty, it's loud, it's... The thing is I am not particularly either of those two things.
Sure, yeah.
And I wasn't very good at it. So I just, I learned very quickly that it didn't matter what his stand-up was, but I did have a very ingrained feeling that, oh, that's what funny is.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm never going to be that funny.
Of course.
Kind of situation.
Of course,
where you're like, well, you're going to have to be a different kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's never going to happen.
If you're interested in genetics and proof of environment, there is a story about a kid, Thomas Rulio. He was 2 months old, and he was abandoned by his parents in Yellowstone National Park. They were forgetful campers. They remembered to put out the fire, but they forgot the kid. The kid, 2 months old, he's running around the woods, right? Now, a pack of wild dogs find and they adopt him. But he never felt quite accepted. And they kept saying, we chose you, the two of the kids who adopted. Now, the parents didn't realize they had forgotten until later on that fall they were showing home movies. I guess, yeah, it looks like Tommy, yeah. Where the hell is he? Well, I don't know, you packed. Well, I don't know what hell he is. Right. Now, these dogs, for 12 years, they raised this kid. The stepfather was a German shepherd dog who said at the time, he tried to bring the boy a bride, but then, those kind of shticks, right? Now, he is running around, walks on all fours, environment assumes all the canine habits, eats raw meat, does all the dog bits. Now, the dogs die of old age. Hunters are going through Yellowstone. They pick the kid up, they take him home. Here's where environment tells the story. 2 years. The mental process is long dormant, becomes surprisingly acute. Well, 2 years this kid graduates. Grammar school, high school. 2 months later, Caltech, a degree in astrophysics. Phi Beta Kappa, people flipping out. Dig this. Here is a kid who was raised by a pack of wild dogs, been with human beings for 2 years and 2 months, is now a Phi Beta Kappa, a leader in the community. People screaming. But here's where tragedy, and again, environment steps in. A month later, after commencement, he was killed chasing a car.
And you did say you might have listened to Button Down Mind. Did you also listen to that
one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I listened to a little bit. We listened to a couple of, I was hanging out with Dan Telfer. And he had it on his phone. So we listened to the Lenny Bruce album first.
Okay.
And then he was like, we're going to listen to this. And it was fascinating because of how fascinating how Bob Newhart did, was doing these characters. They were both doing kind of, Lenny was also doing characters.
Sure.
And doing the voices for them.
Yes,
and
I
both
do
of
like
them.
That a lot.
That was amazing. I was like, why didn't he have more? He must have rejected it, you know? I mean, because I know Carlin did.
Of course, yeah.
And then, like, I've never... It's funny, but I've never listened to a Carlin album or a Richard Pryor album. But I've heard some of the bits. And
sure.
And whenever I hear a bit, I'm like, oh, I've heard that before.
Yeah.
And so somebody must have been playing it somewhere.
Right.
And plus... Poor Richard Pryor has been hacked so hard.
Of course, of course.
But yeah, it was Bill Cosby. Not Bill Cosby. Bob Newhart talking about Abe Lincoln. It was something he's talking to Abe. He's talking to
his agent. PR person. Yeah.
Yeah, he's his agent. He's Abe Lincoln's agent. And I was like, this is such a long way to go.
Yeah, he's a real big fan of that. Those long burns that are just for this really dumb payoff, but
yeah.
There's something about it. Like, again, if you
it's
can do
the
treat.
It's a treat.
Yeah. So, all right. So, you didn't... Your parents had the comedy albums, but you weren't listening to them together.
No, we weren't. But when we sat at the table, you know, my dad, I'm the youngest of six, and we'd go around... And you literally had about a minute. You had to keep it tight, get his attention, tell the story. He would question, you know, and he tried to, you know, better be an interesting story. And everybody got a minute. And if you blew it off, he's like, no, next. And you're like, come on.
Holy shit.
I'm the youngest.
Oh,
and made for fun dinners.
I bet.
Somebody had to be funny and interesting.
Right.
And he always had a great story. They were, you know, it's funny, as an adult listening to my dad's stories, because now, like, as a child, he was never dirty. He never swore.
Yeah.
And he was kind of grumpy. But he, now that we're all older, and I'm an adult around him, and I know that, like, he cheated on my stepmother for... And the joke that I do on, see my published works, is, and it's true, because Nancy told me about it when they went out to dinner after they had gotten divorced, but they were still living together, like crazy people. And for some reason, she went out to dinner with him and my Uncle Greg, her brother, and his wife. And they're sitting at dinner, and she made some crack about him cheating on her. And he said, because he had an affair for 9 years. And he said, not 9 years in a row. Which is a hilarious line.
Yes.
But still a jackass.
Yeah, right.
And but so like stuff like that, since I've become an adult,
yeah.
He will tell like these stories where you're like, Dad, you are not the hero of that story.
Uh-huh.
You are actually the villain of that story. What are you doing? And I did my podcast with him to talk mm-hmm. about his dorkdom, which is sales.
Awesome.
Not realizing that his sales involves everything. Mm-hmm. Like women, mm-hmm. children, mm-hmm. free ice cream, mm-hmm. whatever he can get out of somebody.
Uh-huh.
It permeates his entire existence.
Holy shit.
I know. It isn't. So he's telling me this story about how he met Nancy, my stepmother.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, Dad, I actually don't like the math on that. Because you were still with my mother.
Oh, shit.
And he goes, well, that's the math. It's not my fault. And I'm like, it's specifically your fault.
Right.
You were the people involved.
Oh, my God.
You big weirdo. And so and then 2 days ago, I'm talking to him. He's talking to me about his buddy, Bob. And he tells me this story, horrible story about Bob.
Uh-huh.
And how Bob got over on somebody.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, again, Dad, Bob, not the hero of that story.
Right.
And it's funny. My dad's 78 years old now. And he, what was his thing? It was, So Bob remarried his ex-wife. This
uh-huh.
man, Bob,
mm-hmm.
remarries his ex-wife on her deathbed. They've been divorced for 30 years.
Oh, my
so
God.
That he could inherit.
Oh, my God.
And my dad's like, how smart is that?
No,
how great was that? And I was like, not smart, Dad. Not great. Not good. Kind of nasty, kind of irritating.
Uh-huh.
I said, well, how's Bob doing? And he said, well, Bob's 83, you know? Bob's got 1 foot in the grave and 1 foot on a banana peel. And I was like, oh. And I said, well, have you thought about marrying Bob, Dad? And you would think a man who has slept with every woman that has been available would not be offended by being alluded to being gay.
Uh-huh.
Offended. Offended. Dad, 78, turns out.
You know, it's funny, too, you mentioned that, because I was going to ask if his... It sounds like some of what he's had to do as a salesman might have rubbed off on you as a comic. You know, that ability to speak. Okay, there we go.
I completely have his timing.
Mm-hmm.
And most of my siblings do, too, except my brother, who has epilepsy. Took a lot of drugs. It's really fucked with his timing.
Okay,
and,
there we go.
But he is a very funny guy. He's just his timing is slightly off.
Uh-huh.
And, but we all have this same weird cadence.
Uh-huh.
And this, like, when people meet my sister, they're like, you have the same voice.
That's funny.
And I'm like, well, what are you gonna do?
Yeah.
And nature and nurture.
Uh huh.
So, but I get my timing from him.
Okay.
And I think I get my sense of what's funny from my stepmother.
Okay.
Because my stepmother actually liked stand-up comedy.
Okay.
When I started doing stand-up comedy, she was hilariously said to me, "You're not the funny one. Russ is the funny one, who is my brother, the golden child, who already got to be the handsome one and the smart one." And I was like, he doesn't get to be all of them. He really doesn't. I'm going to be the funny one.
Uh-huh.
It's all going to work out. And but she was, and then she told me who, many years later, she told me who her favorite comic was. And I said, really? You know, I do stand-up comedy before you really get into it.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, that goes without saying, but I'm just saying, my favorite comic is Norm MacDonald. And and I was like, well, it's pretty good taste.
Sure,
Norm MacDonald's, he's darkly funny. And Nancy Kashian, darkly funny.
Yep.
Very darkly funny. And smart.
Okay.
But weirdly, like, I remember when I was a kid, she would do this thing. She would mock people. She couldn't take the grammar. She couldn't take bad grammar.
Okay.
She couldn't take... And she read voraciously. She mm-hmm. died a couple of years ago, and very sad. But she read all the time.
Mm-hmm.
She, you know, she had a high school degree, and then she had an associate's degree for hairdressing. So she was a hairdresser, my stepmother. And, but she read so much that she was much smarter than her nominal education would imply.
Sure,
right?
Sure, sure.
Because she read any number of historical fiction.
Okay.
She read crap, but she also read, you know, whatever. And one of, she said, this is the way I check whether or not I want to be friends with you, is she's like, how does a Roman order 5 beers? Because remember, she's also from Cudahy, Wisconsin.
Uh-huh.
And, and then she does, how does a Roman order 5 beers? Then she makes the peace sign.
Awesome.
And she's like, they don't get it. I don't want to be around them. And I was like,
good test.
So fucking funny.
That's a good test. I like
that's
that.
That's incredibly obnoxious.
What's funny, too, though, is you mentioned your dad telling a story that's like, Yeah, Dad, you're the villain of that story. And it makes me think, like, if you're a stand-up, it's okay to tell a story where you're the villain. You know
right.
what I mean? Where it's okay because you're making the audience feel better about themselves.
Right. But there's a bunch of people who do a bit, and mm-hmm. I am not the boss of stand-up comedy.
Sure.
Right? But I, like everyone else, get to have an opinion.
Of course.
So there is a formula for jokes right now uh-huh. that have been around forever, no doubt. But I've noticed men do it, women do it, everybody does it. Mm-hmm. And it is... the premise that is common to both, which is weird, mm-hmm. is women don't want men to be happy.
Yes, right.
Women don't want men to be happy. Sometimes they do. Women don't want men to be happy. It's never men don't want women to be happy, uh-huh. but it's sometimes. I don't know what it is. But let's go with the one that works for sure, which is women don't want men to be happy. Mm-hmm. A guy will do it and they'll say, My wife doesn't, you know, women never want men to be happy. And then the second part of the joke is, my wife does this, my wife does this, my wife does this.
Mm-hmm.
And then when women do it, they say, me and my friends, women don't want men to be, their boyfriends or husbands to be happy.
Uh-huh.
And this is how this manifests itself. We do this and we do this and we do this.
Uh-huh.
And my problem with that joke is that the setup and the punchline, the punchline isn't a punchline.
Mm-hmm.
It is... Because what I want it to be is, mm-hmm. my wife is a horrible person.
Uh-huh.
This is how she manifests that. And I'm then a third part, which is either one of two things, which is where all the punchlines, I think, reside. And either they are, and I'm going to stay with her anyway. This is what I'm going to do to get back at her or to try to get her to not do these things.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting a divorce.
Right.
One of those two things. Mm-hmm. Like, solve the damn problem.
Yes.
Right? And the women who do it is like, women don't want their boyfriends or husbands to be happy. And so me and my friends, we do this, and we make him sad, we do this, and we mm-hmm. say he can't do things. And the third part of that would be, because I want that joke to be, so I'm a jackass.
Mm-hmm.
My friends that I hang out with are also jackasses, and this is how we manifest that right. in this particular way.
Yeah.
Now, and again, the third part of the joke can go either in two ways. I think it's funny we're jackasses, and this is what we're going to do, and we're going to do it to the point where he eventually hangs himself. Or whatever. Horrible. Or, this is how I'm trying not to be a jackass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there might be a punchline there.
Yeah.
But the problem is you have to be self-aware enough
yeah.
to know that you are the jack. You're the villain.
Mm-hmm.
If you're the villain in the joke, and you know you're the villain,
yes.
then you're fine.
Sure.
If you think you're the hero in the joke, and you are not...
Yeah.
You have just dropped the ball.
Uh-huh.
Comedically, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Three commercials you would never hear anywhere. The first commercial. What's the matter with you, Mary? You look sort of despondent today. You're all late again, aren't you? Yes. What's the matter with you? Didn't you read the little book that Margaret Sanger sent you? Yes. Darling, you know, rhythm control doesn't mean making with every trio that plays the Black Hawk. Commercial number two. Excuse me. You, the gentleman in the water there, are you really a deep sea diver? No, Schmuck, I'm drowning. Commercial number three. I don't know what the hell it is, Bill. I've been smoking this pot all day and I still can't get high on it. What kind are you smoking? Well, all marijuana's the same, isn't it? That's the mistake a lot of people make.
I agree. There's, if you turn into a bully, you've
For
lost
example.
Me.
You know? Oh my God. Because you gotta, and this has been addressed on any number of levels, is uh-huh. that you gotta make fun up.
Right.
You make fun down.
Yeah.
No, nobody's on your side.
Right.
Except for possibly other bullies.
Oh, that's exactly right.
And then you want to be hanging out with those jackasses?
Right. Yeah, right. I mean, if you're in a room that agrees with you on this shitty premise where you pick on somebody who's, can't defend themselves, right. sure, of course everybody's on your fucking
Fantastic.
Side.
Fantastic.
But...
How do you sleep at night?
Exactly right.
And literally, the mantra going through my head every time I see any of this nonsense is, who raised you?
Because mm-hmm.
I'm just like, why would you even... I don't. It's just so weird to me, and it's not that I don't snap when
sure.
I am bored.
Uh-huh.
I will snap.
Right.
I was at a party yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and a man was talking to me. And he is a nice man.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking to me for minutes, telling me what it's like to travel.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I do for a living? I travel. And so I tried to get him off it a little bit. He wouldn't go. And he just said, you know, sometimes if you go to a place, you gotta really get out of the city to see what the culture is in the rest of it, especially in Europe and when you travel overseas. And I finally just snapped and I went, are you really explaining to me what it's like to travel? Seriously? And he was like, okay. And then he pouted for 20 minutes until I left the barbecue. And I was like,
boy.
I'm going to stab you in the earball.
No.
Because you're dragging me up a banana tree. Because so I am not the hero of that story.
Uh-huh.
I am not a particularly nice person in that story. Mm-hmm. Because I could have sat there and just took it.
Sure.
But compound that by 100 times a year.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Where some dude or some anybody, anybody who's explaining some bullshit to me that I clearly know.
Of course. Yeah. No. I'm sorry. Real quick. Side note. You just said earball and you're the only other person I know who says that. That makes
me
so happy. Yes. It's one of my favorite fake words. It's a thing my friends and I say, but we've only ever said it privately. That makes me very happy.
Well, now it's going to go viral.
Yeah. I hope so.
That's
earball,
it.
Kids.
Earball.
Listen for that.
Check it out.
Okay, so I want to make sure that people know Aiden.
The credits and all that?
Yeah, I want to do that too. But I could not find the name of the guy. Just listen, find this album. It's available. I had to find it on YouTube, unfortunately,
because
I don't own it. But so if you're going to recommend to people why to listen to this album if they've never heard it before, you know, and it, regardless of the fact that it's hit and miss, what's a good reason to listen, even just to listen?
Well, from the historical perspective of like, if you're a comedy nerd, if you like comedy a great deal, Lenny Bruce is a guy. It's the good album to listen to, you know, because the later ones are all full of just self-pity and hit, and even more hit and miss. This thing is the most hits.
Yeah.
The most hits and stuff. And the only reason it misses sometimes is because it is because it's dated a little bit.
Yeah.
Because the racism has been, because everyone has done bits kind of like he did.
Sure, definitely.
So people have hacked it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So you might notice that when you listen to it. Mm-hmm. But that Lima, Ohio bit, if you were a comedy nerd, just him being in, and he describes all the different people at the in the town.
The details are so great.
They're so great, and they're mean.
Yes,
but they are not specifically mean.
Right,
he is not making friends with everybody.
Right.
He is across the board. The guys are banana heads. The women are the worst.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't like fat women. He doesn't like skinny women.
Right.
He doesn't like old women. All the women. I'm uncertain who Lenny ended up being with in the end.
Right.
But I hope she was very perfect for him. Anyway, so but I would listen to it just for that track alone. And then there's 5 or 6 other tracks that I, you know, that are just good.
Yeah.
If you can get a hold of the album, that'd be great. If you can't, go to YouTube.
Yeah. And there are a couple of tracks missing if you go on YouTube, but do listen to it. Have you ever seen the movie Lenny, by the way? Side note. Starring Dustin Hoffman?
Yeah. Parts of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's so good. The only reason to watch is if you want to be really angry and really sad at the same time. Like,
right.
That's it.
Super.
It's not a fun movie.
Stand-up comedy movies?
Mm-hmm.
Very hard.
Mm-hmm.
That one has the advantage of being able to use his material.
Yeah.
Like things like the polka dot one with Julie, what's her face?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And even Top 5, which I just saw. Did she see Top 5?
I didn't see him.
Chris Rock.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Chris Rock, romantic comedy.
Oh, yes, I heard about that.
Yeah. Hit and miss.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody said it was his Annie Hall, and I was like, please do not. It is not his Annie Hall.
Uh-huh.
And two, Chris Rock's going to make something so much better than Annie Hall.
Sure.
It's going to be amazing, because I love Chris Rock.
Of course.
But this thing was not it. I love Annie Hall, because it was before, that was revealed.
Sure,
to
sure.
Woody Allen's errors in Judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And what was I talking about?
We just happened to be talking about the Lenny. Stand-up movies.
Oh, the movies, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just really like Punchline and King of Comedy and they're really hard to watch. It's hard to make stand-up into a movie where the characters, because no one's willing. Somebody said one time, my buddy Jim Wooster, he said, nobody's willing to give up their A material.
Right.
That someone else will get to say in a movie.
Yeah.
and yeah. that they've worked on for 10 years.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
good
point. And it is kind of a good point, and you're like, oh well.
Yeah, that's why like biopics about drug-addled rock stars can sound great, because there's fucking amazing music going on in Ray.
It's all good.
Oh, wait, he hit his wife. Oh, he's drugs. Oh, great. It doesn't matter. Look what's playing. Listen to the music that's playing. Fantastic. Okay, so where can everybody find you online?
Well, my name is Jackie Cation.
Yes, it is.
And I have a website on the internet called JackieCation.com. I also have my own podcast called The Dork Forest.
Yes.
Like dork, like nerd and geek. The Dork Forest. We're in our ninth glorious year of doing the show. And people just come on and they talk about whatever they obsess about a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be bees, it can be trains, it can
so
be
cool.
Roman history, it can be Dan St. Germain, depressing literature.
Really?
Very funny. Brian
He's
Kiley,
a funny guy.
Presidential biographies, Brian Kiley.
Really?
I don't know if you know him.
Mm-mm, I don't.
Writes for Conan. Very
okay.
funny guy. Eric Drysdale wrote for Colbert for a long time.
Uh-huh.
Came on and talked about photography.
So cool.
So it can be anything.
That's amazing.
And super fun show. Aisha Tyler, video games.
Mm-hmm.
Felicia Michaels, Lunchbox collection.
Really?
Yes, very
so cool.
fun. And I realized I hadn't mentioned any women, so allow me to do that. Let me fix that. Aaron Foley, sports,
mm-hmm. okay.
At length.
Uh-huh.
And that is the funnest part of The Dork Forest, is when the minutiae gets so minute.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where I'm like, no, keep going.
Yeah.
Maria Bamford, self-help books.
Really?
Diva Zappa, uh-huh. Frank Zappa's youngest,
mm-hmm.
Knitting. And
awesome.
Super fun. Anyway, so that's the podcast, dorkforest.com, familypetancestry.com. I bought it as a joke, so if you can't spell Jackie Cation, just go to familypetancestry.com. Find out if your cat came over on the Mayflower. And but that's about it. And then I just do stand-up all the time, and
yep.
And I love it.
On Twitter, what?
At Jackie Cation on Twitter and Instagram,
okay.
and all of that.
Awesome.
And but. Yeah, listen up. And then I was just on Conan, if you want to see what kind of stand-up I do. Because that's on my front page of my website.
I missed that. Damn it, okay.
Super fun.
All right.
And then I'm going to be on Maron's TV show.
Nice,
the
okay.
The IFC podcasting show, right?
Uh-huh.
I'm playing a podcaster. So,
that's good.
And acting chops did not need to be used. On the season 3.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me, man.
This is a ton of fun. Thank you guys for listening. And as always, have a good thing. And check your earballs. I don't know what that means. Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. Please visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, and if you like us, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. You can find us on facebook.com/comedyonvinyl, Twitter @comedyonvinyl, and find everything else at comedyonvinyl.com.